You're listening to the Film Marketing Academy podcast, the audio series dedicated to helping filmmakers create better film marketing campaigns faster. Join your host, Pascal Fintoni, for what promises to be an exciting and intriguing voyage of discovery filled with advice, stories, and film marketing ideas. Thank you for tuning in. And now, on with today's episode of the Film Marketing Academy podcast.
So, Roger Edwards, a few weeks ago, we reviewed the marketing of The Lost Boys, and you declared that that was a movie that made it cool to be a vampire. And in fact, you wanted to be a vampire following watching The Lost Boys. I'm going to argue that today's film, Blade, proves that it is cool to be a vampire, whether you are a good vampire, as the Daywalker, or a bad vampire as Deacon Frost.
Yeah, it's an interesting one because obviously in Lost Boys, it was a couple of young kids with makeshift crosses and baths full of garlic that defeated the vampires. Whereas in Blade, the vampires have got this gigantic bloke in a great big long black coat with shades on, with armor plating and a great big sword chasing them down. So I'm not sure it's as cool to be a vampire in Blade when you've got him coming after you as it was in Lost Boys, when all you do is hang around fairgrounds picking up pretty girls and feeding off the blood of the locals. But yeah, it is another of those films which does try to turn vampirism into something cool. And that's reflected in the music of the film. It's reflected in the style. You know, it was a good decade after Lost Boys, but I can still see quite a lot of parallels in the visuals and in the way that they put it together. Now, I've got an admission to make here, Pascal. I watched this last night in preparation for today's podcast, and I went into watching it fully thinking that this is actually just a refresher so that I can talk about this with Pascal tomorrow. And I watched the start, and there's this incredibly iconic opening set in a nightclub, and the music is incredible, the atmosphere is incredible, and there's an amazing fight sequence. But after that, there was a lot about the film which I'm thinking, I just don't recognize this. I don't know whether I've actually seen this. Now, don't get me wrong, I enjoyed every single minute of it. It's a fabulous film, and I would quite happily watch it again tonight. Action-packed, great characters, great visuals, great special effects, great music. But I do wonder now whether somehow I actually missed it way back when it first came out in 1998.
Well, thank you for the confession. And I shall think, and the viewers and listeners shall think of a rightful, you know, punishment, because how did you miss this?
How did I miss
this? This was a 1998, you know, success story of all success stories, when really this was a low to medium, you know, sized budget film. But everybody talked about it, and we will talk about the marketing bit and how they exploited PR, you know, to its full. But, you know, here we are, where vampires are essentially wealthy. They are in every part of society, from the police to oil company to tech companies and so on, but they are very discreet. But as is often the case in stories, there is, you know, a disruption comes from the younger generation of vampires, led by Deacon Frost, who says, hang on a minute, humans are our food. Let's stop hiding in the shadows and take over the world. And they've got that, therefore, conflict internally within the vampire ranks. And of course, they are being chased by the character Blade, played by Wesley Snipes, and his mentor Whistler, played by Christopher Christopherson.
Absolutely. And Chris Christopherson, great, great character actor. I remember him being in a film called Convoy many years ago about lorry drivers. But Wesley Snipes looks incredibly cool in this film, doesn't he? As I say, the image of him in that long dark coat, he's got the heavy duty armor on, he's got the sword with all the fancy things that keep snapping out of it, and the cool shades, and he's just got that power and demeanor about him. And he's an incredible martial artist as well. I mean, some of the martial arts fighting sequences in this film are remarkable, absolutely remarkable. And again, I think I said this when we were talking about Lost Boys, every vampire film and every vampire TV series just rewrites vampire lore a little bit to fit with what they wanted to get out of it. So I think in this film, the vampires can't go out in daylight, and they can be affected by garlic, and they can be killed by silver, but crosses don't affect them in this film. So that's quite interesting. But one thing that I've never come across in a vampire movie before, and that this is the difference between some of the older vampires in this, who apparently were born as vampires, as opposed to the younger one, who was actually converted from a human to a vampire. So I have this image in my head of actual vampire babies being born. I don't know whether that's wrong or not.
No, but I think that's what was interesting. So this is based, obviously, on a graphic novel that was produced by the Marvel brand. So here's the thing as well. Now, in 1998, we didn't really appreciate that. That came much, much later. But this is the first Marvel adaptation to the big screen of a comic book graphic novel character. Normally, people always think, oh, Iron Man 2008 was it, you know, the first adaptation, but because they forget about Blade, because it was never really used as part of the marketing campaign. And very often people will say, oh, isn't Black Panther amazing in 2018 because it had a lead actor that was black? I said, well, I'm sorry, what about Blade 20 years prior? So I think what is also very interesting is that there was some assets that the marketing campaign could have used that wasn't used because it just didn't come to mind at the time that this was such a significant movie production, the first adaptation of a character from a graphic novel from the Marvel Universe.
Yeah, and of course, all the Marvel films, Iron Man onwards, have that Marvel sort of introduction, don't they? Where it sort of goes fast forward through a lot of the comics, and that became an iconic way to introduce each film. Whereas this, obviously, it wasn't. But technically, does that mean that Blade could have turned up within other Marvel films then?
Well, funny enough, you should ask the question, Monsieur Roger Edwards, because they are looking to reboot Blade as a storyline franchise with the blessing of Wesley Snipes, who will just have a cameo. They're looking for a new actor. And yes, Blade will appear within, you know, what we now know to be the MCU. But there is a problem. And the problem is as follows, which is Blade is 18 rated. This is a movie for adults, I would argue, because of the storyline is complex, the action, the violence, the blood, the explosions, and so on and so forth, the language, primarily by the character of Whistler. And I just don't know, because I think most of the Marvel movies are either 12 or 15 rated. So I think they have a problem. And I want Blade to remain like Blade. I mean, I don't want it to become Blade Light.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, I did notice again last night, some of Wesley Snipes' lines reminded me of Jules in Pulp Fiction. And I think Pulp Fiction was about 4 years before Blade. But there's one line where he says something like, aim for the head or aim for the heart, but if you miss, that means your ass. And I thought, oh, Jules would have said that in Pulp Fiction. I can fully agree with you. Blade benefited from being and a movie for adults in the special. I mean, it's quite gory, isn't it? In the special effects, it's quite a violent film. The martial arts work is tip top, I think. Absolutely, you know, it's proper. You know, they're hurting each other when they're hitting each other, and it would be a shame to dilute it, definitely.
Oh, I mean, you give me segues into so many things I want to talk about. So to begin with, the writing, let's, you know, give David S. Goyer, you know, really a big applause, because I think that's why Blade works so well. It was very, very well written, and written with a view of creating a world of vampires that we've not seen before. So I mentioned a moment ago that they are part of society. They just, you know, do it very discreetly. But we learn about, you know, the House of Erebus. They have their own language. Yes. There is obviously the prophecy of La Magra and the blood god. You've got all sort of things that, frankly, prior to Blade, there was never that depth of looking into the world of vampires. And as you said, the difference between being a pureblood and someone's been bitten, which is, by the way, well, the motivation of the villain, Deacon Frost, is not a pureblood. He wants a seat at the table of the House of Erebus, and he's denied that, and therefore he's going to take matters in his own hand. But David S. Goyer, you know, wrote Dark City, one of my all-time kind of, again, guilty pleasures when it comes to sci-fi movies. He's behind Batman Begins, he's behind Man of Steel, Terminator, Dark Fate, and so on. And in fact, many fans are suggesting that if you look at Dark City and Blade, they are in some ways paving the grounds for the Matrix.
Yes, that's right. And again, you know, the argument of Wesley Snipes with his black glasses on and his long black coat was very Matrix-esque, wasn't it?
What is lovely is that the director was not necessarily someone that had a long track record. Stephen Norrington from the UK, hooray. And he has a background in set design and special effects, which I think served the movie really well, because the use of the urban landscape, both kind of indoors and outdoor, and when they go into the underground library to meet the character of Pearl, the bookkeeper, I think that's really well designed as well, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. And the final set in the almost looked like a Gothic missile chamber to me, where the final fight takes place. Incredible. Incredible set design.
They really squeezed every single pound from that budget, you know. But what is lovely as well is, you're right, it really did showcase martial arts, so which helped, I think, the marketing. We're going to come on to in a minute, I do promise, our viewers and listeners. So, I mean, obviously, we know because of this biography that Wesley Snipes is an accomplished martial artist. He has a keen interest in Shotokan karate, Aikido, but also has tried his hand in jiu-jitsu and mixed martial arts and so on. Because Blade, as a character, he has to move right. So do you even understand when, you know, when David S. Goyer and Stephen Norrington was told by the studios, what about Denzel Washington instead of Wesley Snipes so we can make more money? They must have just gone, no. I mean, we love Denzel. You love Denzel, Roger, but you need a martial artist to pull this off. And if you've looked at Wesley Snipes, you know, kind of filmography from Streets of Gold all the way to US Marshals, Passenger 57 and more, Demolition Man, you knew that there was the only option was to ask him to be Blade.
Absolutely right. No, it would have been, it would not have been the film it was had it been the other guy. So, we better talk about the marketing, I think, Pascal.
So let's do that. For me, what is lovely about Blade, and because at the time it was made in 1998, the option was very simple. 100% pure old-fashioned public relations, and they nailed it. And to me, that is also a lesson for modern marketers. We do not do enough PR, and I can imagine PR agents and professionals applauding this, but I think that what they did so well is, whilst they, of course, created the film that we now know, and the long film for the times, you know, 2 hours, which is already breaking boundaries, they went all in on the PR, because what else was there, Roger? Of course, you had the poster, just one, which was very clever, and a very good trailer, but they went all in on the PR.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, let's just give a shout out for the tagline as well. Fabulous tagline. The power of an immortal, the soul of a human, the heart of a hero. That is great copy, isn't it?
It's the rule of three, it always works. Yeah.
It's funny. Do you know, I'm thinking back now. Well, this is episode 36 of Two Geeks, and we haven't really talked about PR much, have we? And this is ironic, because when I was marketing director in big corporate, PR was actually one of the things that I enjoyed most about my job. I used to love getting out and talking to journalists and getting in touch with publications and putting together press releases and that sort of thing. And yes, I guess a lot of people forget that PR is part of the marketing mix. I deliberately wrote a chapter on PR in my book, Cats, Mats and Marketing Plans, but it does tend to get overlooked, doesn't it? Mm.
I started as a young marketing officer, as you know, in London in the travel industry, and PR was it. I mean, yes, we advertised in on CFAX, if you remember those days. Yes, we did, you know, work with the travel agents and we did advertising, but PR, briefing travel journalists, you know, taking people to the different destinations so that they can review them in their magazines. So what they could do with Blade was obviously target different audiences. So the martial arts community, you can imagine, couldn't wait. So I was reading at the time in the UK, there was a magazine called Impact Magazine.
Right.
Actually, claim to fame, Chris Ducker and I used to write articles for Impact Magazine reviewing Hong Kong movies. So, but movies in and around martial arts from, you know, Impact to Martial Arts Illustrated to Kung Fu Illustrated in the US and so on, interviewed also the martial arts or screen fighting designer, Jeff Imada, who's really well known in Los Angeles. But of course, part of what was lovely for Blade is most of the bad vampires, the henchmen as they are listed in the credits, were screen fighters from Hollywood and Los Angeles. So
yes,
you could almost take pleasure in spotting J.J. Perry and Simon Ree and Jeff Imada and a few others. Indeed, even Stephen Norrington is one of the vampires in the nightclub with the infamous bloodbath kind of affair. So you have that targeting. Then they're targeting, of course, goth and people who dress using leather. Well, wouldn't you? Then you have those who like weapons. Then you've got, of course, vampire fans, horror fans, you name it. They just went for it. And what was important is everybody within the cast and crew made themselves available for TV interviews, radio interviews, and print media interviews, so much so that they could declare how much they enjoy working on the film, which I think is also an important message, because all too often, Roger, we hear people having a rough time making movies, but those guys had a blast. But wouldn't you?
Absolutely. And am I right in thinking that they actually, as part of the PR campaigns, they had a load of vampire parties all over America?
Yeah. So again, good PR stunt, you know, to be reported back and inviting all the right people. And what is lovely, of course, is 10 years later, 20 years later, the cast and crew still talk about the film. People write articles, do video reviews. The 4K box set was released for Christmas last year. So as a movie, the first Marvel adaptation, 1998, I think it's done really well.
It stood the test of time, you know, and like vampires are immortal. Blade has become almost like immortal itself, hasn't it? Yeah. I mean, as I say, Pascal, last night I watched this and thought, I'm sure I was convinced I'd seen this, and maybe the film I was thinking about was Underworld, which is another similar type of gothic type vampire werewolf film, which I'm sure we'll get round to reviewing on the show at some point in the future. But I thoroughly enjoyed it last night. So whether my memory is cheating and whether I did watch it all those years ago and for some reason I've just forgotten about it or not, it is one of the best action films, one of the best horror films, one of the best vampire films there is. And it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you about it today. Thank you, everybody, once again for tuning in to Two Geeks and a Marketing Podcast. Whether you listen to this, whether you watch this, we really do appreciate you taking the time to soaking up our passion for marketing and our passion for films. And please do, if you've got any comments that you want to make, if you've got any questions you want to ask us, just pop a comment in to the YouTube channel or hit us up on the on Twitter or whatever it might be. And that is it for this week, Pascal, I think. Thank you for watching, everybody. Please make sure that you go out there and make sure that your marketing is done right. See you later. My name is Roger Edwards, and he was Pascal Fintoni.
Thank you for listening to the Film Marketing Academy podcast, the audio series dedicated to helping filmmakers create better film marketing campaigns faster. For more information about our film marketing consultancy and training services, go to filmmarketingacademy.com and book your free discovery video call. And if you haven't already, don't forget to subscribe and follow your host on social media for more updates.